I am George Stolfi, and you were listening to Bitcoin Uncensored.
I met this really wacky guy a long time ago that was, he was coming around the Comedy Store. He was this really odd guy for a bunch of reasons. But one of the things is he carried a gun everywhere he went, and he believed in precious gold coins that were minted outside of the federal government and using those as currency.
Yes.
And so he would have these coins that he carried with him, everything. And he would try to pay for things in these coins, like gold and silver coins, mostly silver. He had silver coins. And he was trying to explain to me that this is legal and that, you know, they're supposed to accept these. And it was very weird stuff. He was a very, very odd. He was very annoying, too. He was one of those guys that, like, talked to you. He kept touching you. He would talk to you and, like, hold you and, like grab your arm and hold you and, like, touch you. And, all right, fucker. Like, what are you? You're a control freak. At least it's like a weird control freak. You know, if someone's saying something to you and they are holding on to you while they're saying that to you, unless you're in love with them, you know, like, it creates a very strange moment.
Yeah.
Like, why are you holding me? Can I get loose here? What if I have to run away real quick? Do I have to break this grip? But this guy used to carry these coins around with him. Like, he had a fucking sack.
He likes to touch his money.
Coins Elvis off commercials and shit like that?
No, man. They were like some weird fucking coin with like an American eagle on them. And
yeah,
these are not Liberty coins or something.
Yeah, they're not weird.
This is Chris DeRose.
This is Jun Seth.
And we have an interview that we're going to play for you today.
We did it a long time ago,
actually.
It was like a month, two months ago.
It was like, usually we release them pretty quick.
Well, you know, I've been sitting on it for a week. We don't have much content that has come
out.
But every week there's been like
we have too much content.
So it has to go out. It's a good interview.
It's good that all of you have seen and butted on and hated and loved and like all sorts of things. You know, he's just a great guy, frankly. I like him a lot.
It's funny because like there's been a couple times when people have come to me like, oh, where'd you learn that? Where'd you learn that? Like, it's like Jay Stolfi. And then like, I didn't think anything interesting happened at Arbuckle. And I'm like, not only does interesting stuff happen there, there's a lot of Bitcoiners in Arbuckle.
And some of the most interesting and intelligent people hang out there. I hate to say that. Jay Stolfi,
like
I didn't
to
mean
say
I,
that.
I'm sorry that I'm sorry to call you intelligent. We aspire
that I apologize
on this
for.
Show to not ever call anyone intelligent. Yeah. You seem to be a fairly intelligent person. And this is an interview. Like after the interview, he came out with like a lot of the 21 slides and such.
Yeah.
So there's like he's done.
He does
a
great
lot of
content.
Good work.
He did the Sofas and Sidechains paper.
Yeah.
And
Sofas and Sidechain is one of the best pieces ever written in Bitcoin.
I don't think it's responsible as a Bitcoiner to go to Bitcoin and not understand that there is another argument to be made as to why Bitcoin is bad.
Right.
Or but even where the shortcomings of Bitcoin are.
You also
are.
Have to understand, he likes it here. He stays around.
He's
always here.
And one thing I'll say about Arbuckle too is they put a lot of stuff that is very interesting and good to know news that won't get past the filters on Arbuckle. That bothers me. Like the guy that was buying cyanide.
Right.
That they wouldn't get the filters. The cyanide market news does not hit Arbuckle.
Right.
The cyanide market news does hit Arbuckle. And you know what? That's fucking relevant and you should all know about that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have like the ability to
don't
like,
put your head in the sand,
exactly.
Don't be an ostrich, be a butt coiner.
All right. Well,
that should be the ad for Buttcoin, frankly.
You met up with a sidebar. We've never met up on the sidebar, have we?
Andreas
has been there. Tons of stuff.
We got to say something that's really smart.
I don't think
sidebar.
The thing is that I think a number of them are fans of our show.
Yeah.
I don't know. They'll make fun of us.
I guess they don't know the interface.
Like
they don't know the interface then, because like our fans should make fun of us.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be like number one on our Buttcoin.
Yeah.
So now they all heard us talking about them.
Guys, we want to be in the sidebar.
All right. Well, I think that's enough for
in
us.
In this moment, I am euphoric.
Let's get right to you know, let's hear from an advertiser, and let's go right to Jay Stolfi. Come on, let's do it. Come here with me and my boy.
Unleash the technology behind Bitcoin with Wayne Chain. Wayne Chain is the world's fastest and most secure blockchain. Our secret? No mining. That's right. Proof of work has been replaced by Proof of Wayne, a powerful new cryptographic algorithm that's sweeping the globe. Wayne Chain features unlimited storage, zero confirmation times, and time-traveling transactions. That's right. Wayne Chain is always correct because transaction errors are fixed via time travel. It's like they never happened. Zero carbon footprint. Full support for unreal transactions. Perfect for banking, healthcare, insurance, supply chains, and more. Wayne Chain is the Byzantine fault-tolerant crypto-economic state machine your IT department has been waiting for. We've turned down investment from the world's leading venture capitalists to bring you this exclusive crowdfunding offer. Just visit WayneChain.com or call 1-800-WAYNE-CHAIN to buy your Wayne coins. That's WayneChain.com or call 1-800-WAYNE-CHAIN. Don't settle for Bitcoin's technical limitations. Get rid of those pesky permissioned ledgers once and for all. Blockchain all the things with Wayne Chain.
What's up, party people? This is Chris DeRose.
And this is Jun Seth.
And with us today is somebody that you've all been asking for quite a while. someone that I've had the pleasure, actually, of side channeling on a number of occasions. The infamous, the nefarious George Stolfi of Our Buttcoin is with us today.
Welcome.
Welcome, George.
Hi. Nice to be here. Thank you for the interview.
George,
that's the first time we've ever been told that.
George, you are being called the biggest Bitcoin troll.
You're the Buttcoiner of Buttcoin.
You're the Buttcoiner of Buttcoiners. Tell the audience what you think of Bitcoin.
I've explained it a lot on our Bitcoin and other forums, but it is basically, I view it as a nice experiment, an interesting experiment that, didn't quite solve the problem that it was supposed to solve. And it has been hijacked to become things that are not quite nice.
And George, what would you say that Bitcoin's goal was to solve? Like, what is it that Bitcoin has failed to do?
I think it is stated in the white paper, and I think that's a very good, honest explanation of Satoshi's goals. I mean, there was this problem that was a 30-year-old problem or something like that, how to make a payment system through the internet using public key cryptography. When the technology was invented, it looked like, it should be simple to do a payment system doesn't depend on a bank in the center, because now we have this capability of signing things and cryptographically verifying things. So why can't we do a payment system that doesn't depend on a third party, on a central party? So I think that Satoshi had this bright idea of he could solve the problem. He thought about it for a while and figured out about it. Look at like it would work, so he implemented it and asked for people to test it. I think that's what the goal was. I mean, make a P2P payment system that would not depend on third parties to check the basic double spending problem.
So I think that a lot of people on our Bitcoin want us to roast you, to hang you. Hang you from the ceiling,
Perry Ann Boring
and
you.
and to absolutely roast you. But I want to say at the start of this interview, I don't think this is going to be like that, because
I strongly suspect you're right.
Because first off, George Stolfi has done some wonderful things. Like, his side chains are sofa paper. I think is hilarious. He clearly has
His criticisms are good.
He has skepticism that I think is completely lacking in the space. So when we look at like some of the people that we interview, I think the people like George Stolfi are less of a problem right now than people like Perry Ann Boring in the community.
I very much appreciate, even if I don't agree with George.
George, I put you in like the vein of like the Isabella Kaminskas, who've got some pretty decent criticisms of Bitcoin.
I've read only a few of her articles in Forbes is, or the, no where does it
Financial Times, right?
So I mean, she speaks mostly about economics or things like that. I don't know if she talks about technical detail, but I mean, I think she has a more, even more, let's say, hostile view that I have.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, although she's been coming around a little bit lately. What got you into Bitcoin exactly? Because I'd like to know your story a little bit more. What brought you here?
Well, I mean, I was following Rick Falkwinge. Falkwinge.
Falkvinge, or whatever his name is. I've never
Twitter,
known how to say it. So
at some point, he tweeted that he was putting all his savings into Bitcoin. And well, I thought, what's that thing? And then shortly later, he tweeted angry that Bitcoin was crashing and Mt. Gox was apparently replaying all the ticker tape over and over again, so that people couldn't see from the ticker tape that Bitcoin was crashing or something like that. And they got interested because, partly because, I mean, Brazil was just going through a thing called the Telex Free, which was a big MLM marketing scam that took about $1 billion of money from some people and put them in the other pockets.
Wow.
And I thought, well, this looks like another Telex Free all over again. So I started following it because, well, I generally think of it as part of my job. I mean, here to warn the public about things that have computer related. I mean, social impact or whatever.
You clearly love it. I can tell. I look at your comments. I know how much time you love it here. You really do.
You're here for the same reason we are, I think.
The reason why I'm there, I mean, I must be honest, is mostly for the fun of it, right? I mean, it's just just a hobby, and it is a. I mean, I followed other subjects as intensely as Bitcoin before. I mean, I was watching Code Fusion for a while, space exploration, the Voynich manuscript, and things like that. And so, I mean, it is just one on that series. Like, I like to get into the. Whenever I get one of those obsessions, I want to go down to the bottom of it, whatever. So,
well, being that is the case, that means that you have to know that Bitcoin is not like Telex Free.
No, it is not, because Telex Free was intentionally created to be a scam, and Bitcoin was not. I think Satoshi didn't even. I believe that Satoshi didn't even imagine that. Bitcoin would be one day an investment or something like that. I think someone had to point out to him in 2009 that it could be a great investment or whatever. So, and I think that, I don't know why he dropped it out, but I'm more and more believing that he didn't like what it was becoming, and so he just lost interest in it. That's.
Do you believe that it's a naturally occurring Ponzi then?
It is a naturally occurring. It has become a naturally occurring Ponzi, yes. So pyramid. I mean, in the loser sense, that it is something where the earlier investors get money by taking money from the later investors. And so at some point, that thing is all the profit of that you can make in there is is losses of someone else. And the only way that you can keep making profits is by getting more and more investment. And then at some point, this thing is going to collapse like all pyramid schemes.
Well,
because
so
there won't.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, you know, I'm very sympathetic to this allegation that Bitcoin is a naturally occurring Ponzi. But I also feel like that might be an oxymoron. I don't know that you can actually have a naturally occurring Ponzi, but maybe you can. Let me ask you, is gold a naturally occurring Ponzi? And or.
No, at this, I mean, since 2001, 2002, I think it has become not so naturally occurring Ponzi.
It has intentional.
Yeah, I mean, they created
okay.
this
well, that's funny.
This gold fund.
I didn't expect that.
I mean, people who created it, certainly they knew what would happen. I mean, that they created it because they expected the price to shoot up much above the natural price of gold, which
do you believe there is a natural price of gold?
There is a demand that is not caused by people wanting to invest in it as a financial instrument. It is industrial, and people who just like to dress with the gold jewelry or whatever. So,
I think he's talking about non-speculative forces in the price.
But that would make it like. I mean, I've heard figures as low as 10% of gold is used for that.
The percentage of the gold that goes into how much of gold gets used and how much gets hoarded. I don't know those percentages, but looking at the price history of gold, I would guess that today that natural price is less than $300 per ounce or something like that. So just extrapolating the price before 2001, accounting for inflation and possibly increase in use, whatever, I don't see how it could be more than $300. And the price now, I think it is $1,300. It was $1,800 in 2011, I think. So this big difference between the two numbers is can only be speculation. And so lots of people who bought at $1,800, they provided substantial profit to the people who bought earlier and sold at $1,800.
Right? Do you believe that fiat currencies are sometimes naturally occurring Ponzi's?
Well, they are not intended to be investment, right? So I don't think that people are not supposed to make profit by buying and selling currencies. So
I get that.
They may be. We may discuss whether they are bad or fake or whatever in other senses, but I don't think they deserve to be called Ponzi's, even in the broad sense.
Well, I agree with you there, but I think I'm trying to figure out how you reasoned through it. Like, what is the delineation?
Like, I don't disagree that Bitcoin might be a naturally occurring Ponzi, but the it seems to me that the natural corollary then would be to go through things like precious metals that have huge speculative prices and whose price support requires a huge influx of people. And that would also seem like a naturally occurring Ponzi then. And I would think that you'd have to then classify those in the same vein. So it sounds like you do with gold, but only since 2001.
Only for the part of the price of gold that is above this floor that I'm guessing it is about $300.
We'll call that the Glenn Beck effect.
Glenn Beck is one of those sellers, peddlers of gold and gold fund, right?
He's a popular conservative radio host here who pushes gold stuff, and frankly, I think it's a large reason why like a lot of conservatives and libertarians these days own gold. But that's beside the point. I think
like Max Kaiser,
just like him. Only a little bit.
Peter Schiff,
he's a little bit more irrational, I think.
I don't know if that's possible, but maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't
not
I mean,
irrational.
I don't listen to those guys.
Okay. So I mean, it sounds to me like you would view most of these asset classes that have high speculative price support to be naturally occurring Ponzi's, though. I mean, is that a fair characterization?
At some point, I mean, like, considering how much advertising there is for gold and the gold funds, I don't think that it could be called naturally occurring.
Right. I get that point, right? But like, there's like a lot less for silver and
even
or
Bitcoin
bronze,
after 2013, after early 2013, when the big whale started to go into and invest into Bitcoin, I think it is no longer. Does not longer deserve to be called naturally occurring. I mean, right now it is a Ponzi or pyramid scheme.
Okay.
People seem to object to word Ponzi.
Ponzi is what it is, right?
I don't care. But the important point is that the only way to make money by investing in Bitcoin is selling it to some other investor.
Right.
Buys it. So,
it's also a statement about capital inflows. We need people to continually be interested in buying this. So, Jay, my big question for you is just like there is a need for gold, as in people use it for jewelry or people decorate their houses with it, or, you know, Aztecs built giant temples with it. Is there a need for Bitcoin?
There is a demand for Bitcoin. I don't know if it is really a need, but there is a demand for Bitcoin as a currency. I've just tried to do some estimates. There is an equation that tells you how much the price of a currency should be based on how much how many payments occur with that currency, how much of that currency is in circulation, and how long it takes between two payments with the same unit of currency, right? And if you plug in, if you ignore speculation, that equation gives something less than $10. Depends on, I mean, you have to guess some of those parameters, but it seems that the natural price for Bitcoin, considering its demand for use as a currency, is very, very small.
I mean, well, so let's talk about that, because I think that that's where our platform differs from yours. We are active drug users. I use heroin.
I'm a coke addict.
Right. And for us, we see that the darknet markets are providing service to us and to others in a way that can't be done without Bitcoin. And that's also true for a number of other industries. We also have sex with hookers
and gamble.
And we gamble. We're the best people.
we're really good people. Jay, we appreciate your friends with us.
Yeah. So what I always see on our Buckcoin is a kind of dismissal of that, and I'm wondering how you work your way through that. You want to explain your feelings on that subject?
I don't think that you can have a serious project like that that is based entirely on illegal trade, right? I mean, you know, where you live.
But George, isn't illegal trade, isn't the black market a very serious business? Like, isn't, I don't know, weapons transmissions and like weapons movement and stuff like that?
It is a serious thing, but it is something that, people normally should not work to have it. Right, should fight it, not help it.
Isn't a majority of cash transactions for those types of projects?
No, it is. That's a common.
It's a common refrain, but it's quasi
like,
true.
I mean, it's very different to say that most cash transactions are for illegal trade, and most illegal trade uses cash.
Okay, that's true.
The second one is true. The first one is false.
So
most cash transactions are not for illegal trade.
Sorry.
And for Bitcoin, it's almost the opposite, I think. As far as I can tell, I mean, a large part, at least, of Bitcoin payments are for illegal payments.
And we agree. So that would actually
only a small part of the legal payments are in Bitcoin.
That would be to our point though. Like maybe I agree with you. Maybe it's bad that Chris has a heroin problem. Maybe we want that gone. And maybe it's bad that I have a cocaine problem. But like the fact of the matter is that these trades do exist, and Bitcoin provides a service for them, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. So
I don't,
like, you
I'm
might
not
be
sure
right.
that there is nothing that anyone can do about it. I think that people are. I mean, one thing that I don't understand about Bitcoin to this day is why the U.S. government and its close allies are so friendly towards Bitcoin. I mean, even though the Bitcoiners themselves say that their goal is to destroy the government or whatever. Well,
some Bitcoiners say that. But my point is, George, that, like, the criticism here is that we shouldn't have those things. And okay, I'll agree with you. We shouldn't have those things. Chris will take the other side. Chris thinks we should have them.
Look, I mean,
but they exist. So, like, the price support, there has to be some
whether,
price support.
Whether drugs should be prohibited or legal, it is a separate issue, right? I mean,
of course.
If you think that the society should let people buy drugs through the internet, then you should fight for that to be legalized.
Now
fighting for there being for the society to authorize an instrument that lets people violate its laws it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
Well, but George, so Chunstead's point is the same, though, I think, because you said at the beginning of this interview that you did like a rough calculation based on the number of transactions that were being done, and you came up with a price of about $10. Did you include the less than $10? So did you include the $500,000 per day in heroin, gambling, sex, drugs, and rock and roll in that number, or did you not?
I don't remember, but you can do that the equation again. I don't remember what number I used. I think I used the 10% of all volume. If you take all the transactions per day that are recorded recorded in the blockchain, and you convert the outputs to USD, and that most of that. It's probably not payments at all. I mean, it's just people moving money from one pocket to another pocket.
That's real life feature.
There is evidence for that. I mean, like, for instance, when the USMS auctioned those the Silk Road bitcoins, they auctioned 100,000 bitcoins, and the total of the transactions that were that occurred during that auction was five times as much. I mean, 500,000 bitcoins moved because of that auction of 100,000 bitcoins. So that gives you an idea that most of the traffic in the blockchain is not payments. So okay, so you apply 10%. Or 20% or whatever. I don't remember what factor I used. It is somewhere in the forums there. I may find it later and post it to you if you wish. But
I think the reason Chris asked the question though is because we found that a lot of people who are interested in this, particularly people like yourself who are good people, unlike us, that they tend to sort of dichotomize the types of transactions into good transactions, legitimate. Real transactions.
We talked to the IMF
illegitimate,
about this.
Unreal transactions.
They use the term real and unreal transactions.
I don't think that Bitcoin should worry about that. I mean, no payment systems should worry about that, except maybe if the government requires it. Okay, but I mean, usually. It's not the business of Bitcoin to decide whether transactions are morally good or bad or whatever.
We agree.
But I think that it is important to distinguish whether the transactions are just people moving Bitcoins from one wallet to another, or whether they are really transferring Bitcoins from one person to another or one company to another, because that gives you a measure. It is the second ones that give you a measure of adoption or whatever. So,
but George, I'm still trying to figure out, is it your contention that the reason why we shouldn't be looking and including these industries is because the government will shut off the system? Or is it because that...
I don't... Well, in that computation there, I didn't care to... I didn't exclude those payments. I didn't try to exclude them.
Right. I mean, candidly, it seems like you have some blinders on to me. Like, Jensen, are you getting that impression as well?
Not really.
I mean, I don't know. What is his point then about the black market? Because that seems to exist, right? But George doesn't want to talk about it?
No, it's that George, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think his point is that the best thing for a society to do is acknowledge that Bitcoin's used for drugs like we do, and then to say, like, so, you know, you as individuals aren't allowed to use Bitcoin anymore.
Is that right? Is that your point, George?
Sorry to say it again.
Well, if a majority of transactions, if Bitcoin truly is, if its price support comes from illegal transactions and transactions that are like complete externalities, you would say that then the government should say the only people that are going to use Bitcoin are illegitimate people and make it essentially illegal for any normal person to use it.
I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet. I mean, I'm surprised that the U.S. government still seems to be so friendly towards Bitcoin when it shouldn't. But eventually the U.S. government will get tired of this talk about, well, revolutionize finance or whatever,
right,
and will just say, listen, I mean... it's being used for ransomware. Ransomware is a problem. It's being used for drug people, kids buying drugs through the internet, and we don't want that. So, well, what the fuck?
That's true. So, George, what do you do then when, like, a good person, like your grandmother, is ransomwared and now it's illegal to get Bitcoins?
Well, that's the problem also for cash or for money or for anything.
It's not a problem for cash because ransomware didn't exist until Bitcoin.
Say, if it is impossible to get... ransomware, for instance, is a problem now because Bitcoin exists and it is easy to get. So the people who make ransomware, they can demand Bitcoins because they know that people can get Bitcoins to pay them. Before, when there was no Bitcoin, I mean, I don't know what they used, if they used it at all, maybe Liberty Reserve or gift cards, I don't know.
I don't know that ransomware was a problem before Bitcoin.
Yeah, I never heard of it. I think I heard the concept, but I never heard of it in the news, a major problem.
So I was around a little bit before you, actually even a lot before you, but the sequence of events as I remembered them, and Johnson, you tell me if I'm wrong here, Senator Schumer went on national television and said that we have to stop this Bitcoin.
Because you can buy drugs.
Right, and he did that because Silk Road had existed. And this was even before Mt. Gox.
When was that? That was in 2014 already,
No. That was 2012. That was 2011.
11,
it was remember the run-up to $30, George?
That was before George, I think.
I think it was. So what happened is we had a run up to $30, and everyone was like, "Holy shit!" It went from like sub $1 to $30, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, this thing is over." And then it crashed the next day. That was right after WikiLeaks started to accept as well.
Right. So point
on the way down, WikiLeaks announced that they were going to start accepting.
Yeah, my
Bitcoin.
Point was that Silk Road preceded even a lot of the liquidity solutions we have today.
Correct, and the price support. Like
we were
sub $1
in early 2012 or something like that.
It was 12 or 11, right in there. I think it's late 11 or early 12.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think the only reason I bring that up, George,
it's been like March of 2012.
What we see, and I think that what differs in our platforms is we don't think that the federal governments can actually do that much to curb the use of Bitcoin because we've been doing it. I mean, Johnson and I have been doing it since you made the craziest
and
ways
back in
to
the
get
day,
Bitcoin.
Everyone
yeah.
thought that it probably was illegal. That was what everyone was doing in the forums. They're like, well, this is probably illegal.
But I think that there was another senator, I think, or whatever, who tried to do the same in 2014, probably, wasn't it? Because, he's a minority guy. I mean, just one voice in Congress, so no one paid attention to it for some, and that's what puzzled me.
If you have Schumer telling you that you have to do it, then like, I mean, Schumer's a high-ranking member of the Senate, or represent one of the two. I don't know.
Yeah,
but he's not. He's no slough. Like he's.
Well, but I apparently mean, it didn't glue. I mean, it didn't stick to the thing because,
I think
the U.S. government.
But George, our point isn't even if they made it illegal, it wouldn't matter.
Right. Exactly. I think that's what we have here.
I doubt that. I think that if they made it illegal, there wouldn't be no local bitcoins. There would be no Bitcoin ATMs.
But local bitcoins would just be out of Bulgaria.
Exchanges.
Yeah, local. So the way local bitcoins. Here's the thing, George. Like local bitcoins will do a lot, but people were calling in these phone numbers and doing crazy like gift cards,
right.
slash phone payment, slash whatever.
Local bitcoins will just move to Bulgaria. They'll be on a Tor address, like an Onion address.
Right.
You know, like it. Like none of this is hard.
I think the price will definitely take a big hit.
I mean, suppose that you want to buy bitcoins, so you go to these local bitcoins and you see a list of names around in your town. And, well, how do you know that those are not the FBI agent waiting to get you?
Maybe. Well, you don't. But, like, as is the case right here with Mitchell Espinoza, even if, like, that is the case, even if that is a threat, people still do it.
Some people may still do it, but, I mean, most people will...
But here we have
not want to
the FBI. The FBI is not going to set up sting operations to catch 400 people in a city that are doing like low level money. Like what
if they catch
money
two
laundry.
Or three, I mean, then there won't be 400.
Can I just point out though, that here we are talking about the utility of Bitcoin for the last 10
right.
minutes? And while I agree with George, first off, the speculative value would definitely lend towards like a natural Ponzi scenario.
There, I agree as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the speculative value would die in this scenario that like Coinbase was gone. But that I think that what would happen is we'd be left with the utility that we had in 2012. And I don't think George sees that way.
Well, I think he does because the utility in 2012 gave it a price of like $6, $4, $3. So I think George does see it that way.
Maybe George should weigh in.
I try not to guess what the price will do, even in hypothetical scenarios, because, if it is banned in the U.S., it may continue to be a speculative instrument in China, where it's basically the only thing that it is there. I mean, China is... mines bitcoins and speculates with bitcoins and doesn't use bitcoins as far as I know. I don't know how the drug scene is in China, but I suspect that there isn't much.
We know
a little bit
about that.
I know a lot about that. The drug scene in China is almost exclusively in Bitcoin. Like they're the manufacturers. It's as if Apple were taking bitcoins for iPhone production, you know, or if they were making iPhones for bitcoins. It's just like that. That is the center of the Bitcoin universe, China and Russia.
Yeah, I mean, China is the center of the Bitcoin mining and it's the center of Bitcoin trading. I believe that they set the price, basically.
Do you believe there is no utility then? That there is, in fact, zero utility to Bitcoin? Or do you think there is some utility to Bitcoin?
I'm having a hard trouble, a hard time trying to figure out situations where it would be important to have a channel that does trustless, whatever channel, for legal payments.
Well,
for legal payments, it seems that centralized systems with trust, work very fine for most people. They have many advantages that Bitcoin cannot expect to have.
I agree.
So what else is there besides illegal payments?
Okay, so George, it sounds to me like you agree with us. Almost wholly.
About the facts, I hope that we agree, right?
Right.
I
mean, no. Those seem to be
the problem.
Yeah. Well, no. The conclusions are less important, I think, because those are all speculative, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're all on the same page, so we have the same inputs here.
I think so.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you very reasonably took all of the inputs and you put them into your blender, and we put them into ours, and you got a blue juice and we got a red juice.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. I think what's going on, though, as I hear it, is like George is from a different culture. Like for me growing up in South Florida, drugs are just as whatever. It's like fucking beer or lollipops or whatever. So like I look at it and it's just part of the game for me.
I mean, if you don't think that drugs are big in Brazil, then...
What? But no, drugs
are certainly big in Brazil. I mean, I know several people. I mean, I had to deal with that when I was head of department about staff members having
George, here's the thing.
It's certainly big in Brazil.
We know that drugs are used by like everybody.
Probably you, George.
You, George, are probably a drug user. You don't have to admit it.
Yeah, it's okay.
I drink lots of coffee. That's one problem.
Okay, so you're. We now know you're not a Mormon.
Yes, I am addicted to it.
Okay, so
George
does caffeine. You do heroin. Yeah. I do coke. George's staff members do probably acid.
It was crack, I think.
Okay. George's staff members do crack.
I mean,
George.
Fortunately for them, the university considers that a disease, not a crime.
Oh, they are lucky. Yeah.
But the guy was always in and out of recovery.
Do you think more people use drugs than have iPhones in the world?
I don't know.
You have to think about it. So the answer is probably yes, or at least close.
I mean, I don't know. I think the universe of people that I know, I would believe that drug use is very small.
But that's the people you know.
I can tell you the stats disagree. Students are another matter.
I mean, I guess that most of the students here have
everybody in total. Everybody in total, George.
I don't know. I would have to check statistics to see how many drugs. I'd be willing to bet that every year... There are different kinds of drugs. I mean, the answer is very different.
Yeah, well, I don't care about the different kinds, but my point is that drugs in general, because, like, I would bet that every year something like 25 or 30% of the population uses drugs, like hard drugs.
Hard drugs.
At least in the U.S.
In the U.S., maybe.
At least in Florida. It's definitely in Florida.
I don't know in Brazil. I mean...
You should check those numbers, because to me, George, like that's where Bitcoin... Like that, gambling, seeing prostitutes, another global phenomenon. I mean, these are all things in which Bitcoin has very much a place.
No, I don't know. I would have to check the numbers. I would guess that you are exaggerating, or at least you're looking...
Exaggeration requires intent. Exaggerators don't know they're exaggerating, maybe. But I'm just saying, it's a lot of people.
Let's say, should you have a project that was an open project, a project that is that has companies working, IPOs and whatever, whose goal is to make it easier for people to break the law. I don't think that that's... I mean, it's not a matter of being right or wrong. I think that simply doesn't make sense.
Jay, you know, though, that in North Korea, breaking the law is importing Bibles. So, like, that's not...
No, I mean, it is not a matter of being right or of that being right or wrong. I think that it doesn't make sense... as a plan for getting the project going. I mean, I would understand if Bitcoin was a project run by the mafia or whatever.
Here's the thing too, George. I think there's a lot of cultural...
It can't make sense of a project that tries to... pretend that it is a legitimate project.
So, George, hold on one second.
The main use case is supposed to be illegal trade.
George, hear me out. This is why I think this is a cultural thing, because here in the States, we were told all of our lives that, like, marijuana was bad.
Yeah.
And so all throughout the United States, marijuana was not only illegal, it was the most illegal thing you could...
Worse than coke.
Right. And so now here in the United States, we see businesses that are run by soccer moms in various cities who are using cash money because they're locked out of like credit cards and such, who are running these dispensaries. So I think for us, we don't really see it that way because, like, for me, I don't see any difference now between weed and crack or heroin even, because it's obvious, at least now, that the culture in America is such that these are just regulations like any other. No different than Uber, to me.
I don't think that is that we are. I mean, I would feel even less. Comfortable talking about drugs than about than talking about economy, right? Because I have no particular knowledge of that field.
That's fair.
So, but I mean, I can say I think that legalizing marijuana and legalizing other crack, I think they are two very different problems. From what I can see, I saw the effects that crack has on people, not just that staff member, but other people close to me. And I mean, it's not something like that. I think the marijuana. I never heard of anyone having that problem with marijuana.
Well, George.
I think that Uruguay, which is our neighbor down here, has tried to legalize marijuana, but I think it got so much pressure from other countries like the U.S. that eventually became almost a joke, the legalization. So,
George,
I think that marijuana is something that you think should be okay, it should be legal.
We agree. But George, do you think that Uber exists to break the law, like as a project? Do you think Uber's the basis of the project Uber. Of Uber seems to me that it is in fact to break the law? That entire project entire efficiency is in violating rules.
The utility of Uber.
It certainly is not doesn't have any dangers like to health and life of people like drugs have. So it's mostly a matter of money and the commerce.
Why did we have the taxi medallion system in the first place? And I would say that the reason was price support. Like we had a supply restricted market so that people could go home and feed their children. And now we have Uber coming in, destroying that entire infrastructure. And you can have a discussion over whether that's good or not, but it definitely affects people.
I don't think that commercial regulations are in the same class as drug regulations. I mean, it is different.
But this isn't a qualitative statement.
Right.
The point here was that can you, in fact, find utility in a legal framework that is restrictive? It wasn't necessarily about the quality of the legal framework.
First of all, I don't know. I think that when Uber started, it wasn't directly violating any laws. I mean, it was a matter of interpretation whether calling up someone and getting a ride. I mean,
that was what they told you, but that's not what they told their investors. Their investors told their investors they had to raise a ton of money because they had a huge legal battle in front of them. They knew exactly what they were doing. And not only that, they set it up so that they would pay fines for drivers.
They would face legal battles, as any industry that tries to move into a market that has dominated by other industries, right? I mean, like if you started selling some different soft drink, you probably will be facing lots of legal trouble from Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola or whatever, because they will look for any excuse.
I think we explored your views on Bitcoin enough to my level of satisfaction. Like I think that as I'm hearing this, I think that's a good exploration of where our opinions differ because they're almost exactly the same otherwise.
Correct. Until then. So,
and with your time, I want to talk about blockchain.
I agree. Can we ask you some questions about blockchain, George?
Sure.
What do you think of it?
Blockchain?
Just generally, like the whole industry, like how the pivot away from Bitcoin, this like, you know, people saying they're going to use blockchain, which is the Bitcoin without the bad parts.
Well, good luck to them, but I am very pessimistic that that the blockchain can be used for anything other than Bitcoin, because it is a very inefficient database way of storing things. It was only used for Bitcoin only because it was the only solution for distributed, anonymous, and whatever, without trusting authorities. So even for other distributed, trustless systems, I'm not sure that there is a much space for that terribly inefficient data structure, right?
Well, what is your take on this? Because I'm astounded. I'm astounded at, frankly, what is just the complete lack of cognitive analysis going on in the blockchain movement right now. It is so ephemeral, and it is regressed so far up its ass that it is quite literally just a hope and a dream that will solve any problem you throw at it. Have you seen anything like this in your career? And do you agree with that? I mean, because it seems to me like the definition of blockchain has changed.
Artificial intelligence in the 60s and 70s, I think, was a bit like that. The dot-com bubble in 2001, was it? Something like that. I think it also was like that. I mean, you just said that you were going to set up a website and that would do something funny, then that you got millions of dollars in investment.
Well, I think in that case, though, there was the pretense of like commerce based on this new innovation that was TCP/IP. Whereas I think the difference between that and blockchain is that blockchain has no definition for these people. It's if we made up like the FUBAR, and FUBAR is going to be the new platform, and then we just leave it at that. I mean, that's what I think I see currently. Do you see it that same way, or like do you think that the definition of blockchain?
I think there is this vague definition of blockchain, which is a journal-like system where you have records of all transactions that happen, and each record has a Merkle link to the previous one. So in order to falsify to change anything, you would have to rebuild the entire database from that point on, because the Merkle links would change. I think that's one of the interesting novel ideas that is in the blockchain. But I think
George, your definition doesn't sound like it includes proof of work.
Doesn't sound that include what?
Proof of work.
Oh, proof of work. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's because it is that's the vagueness of it, right? I mean, you can say that it is a blockchain even if it doesn't have proof of work, because if you have the proof of work is necessary for other reasons, like I think the order is the opposite. I mean, Satoshi first decided that he needed proof of work for to get the distributed, the trustless, whatever thing working. And then he saw that, well, the only data structure that can get proof of work to function is by using this long sausage of blocks with Merkle links and special Merkle links with proof of work in them. So I think that if you take away proof of work, then you can still have a blockchain, but I don't know if it is any interesting.
Well, I mean, we don't have
to, that seems to be like what everyone's saying these days. Their allowance is, well, we can call that a blockchain, but it's not interesting. It's a difference without a distinction, I guess.
There was a time on our Buckcoin when blockchain was good and Bitcoin was bad. But I think that almost all of our Buckcoin now believes that blockchain is bad and Bitcoin is bad. Do you see that as well? I think there was a time on our Buckcoin where people did believe in blockchain and not Bitcoin. But I don't know that I see that currently. I think that those people...
I don't know. Well, I haven't... when was that?
A year ago?
A
year ago.
Maybe a year and a half.
I think there was lots of excitement because people didn't realize that blockchain... they still don't realize it today, that blockchain succeeding doesn't have any impact whatsoever on Bitcoin succeeding. And yet people seem to think, even today, that if Bitcoin, anything that is any advance that blockchain is doing in finance will be somehow help Bitcoin. I don't see any chance of that happening. Right.
Right. Well, that's probably for all the reasons that we already discussed.
Yeah.
Well,
because basically, if banks are going to use blockchain, they are not going to use the Bitcoin blockchain. That's it.
Right? We don't think they won't use blockchain either. Like all that means is that they will not be
coming
here.
And I doubt very much. Maybe they will, but I doubt very much. I mean, technically, I think that I don't see any.
If they do, it's because they rebranded.
Real use for a blockchain without proof of work, and I don't see them needing proof of work. So
if they do, it's going to be because they call their existing system like Swift will snap its fingers and label Swift a blockchain, and no one's going to inspect them on that because it doesn't matter. So if they do, that's what I think is going to happen: is they'll say like we use blockchain now, and then you look at the code and it's like no different. It's an Oracle database. And it's the same shit, and they'll have moved on because that's. Would satisfy
yeah,
the marketing agenda.
If I can risk a prediction, I mean that, and make a fool of myself.
We love predictions, and we love people making fools of themselves.
I think that maybe in a few months or by in another year or so, there will be some article saying that blockchain is just bullshit, and then no one will want to talk about blockchain anymore, right? So
thank God. Let's hope.
That'll be amazing.
we've been waiting for that. We even considered writing it, but we have no clout.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was like a code fusion, right? I mean, for a while, there was some period of time when code fusion was being researched by serious companies, by serious labs. I think one of the first labs that announced that they had reproduced the code fusion experiment was at MIT, and so that very next day. And of course, I mean, eventually there was a backlash. Some people started saying that, well, this is absolutely nonsense, and then every scientist stopped it.
Are they building like a reactor in France that has some potential, or is that bullshit? I don't know.
Every year, like they have huge amounts of money and funding, I think, going to like cold fusion projects. Yeah. That they've been doing that for like 20, 30 years.
Sounds like blockchain. Yeah, let's hope it doesn't last that long.
One thing is fusion, nuclear fusion. Not cold fusion is another thing. Maybe you weren't paying attention when it
happened. I did know
that.
That's right. Right. That's right. See?
Yeah, the code fusion is two chemists that thought that you could make.
Yeah, George, you're not as dumb as you look.
You're not as dumb as we look.
No, I don't know. I'm old, right? So I don't know. Maybe I don't know if that makes me dumber or whatever, but I have been through many other things, and I've seen lots of scams and whatever. So I think that's what makes me more skeptical.
Yeah, we're with you there.
You know, I want to ask one more question, I think, and then we'll probably end the interview for now. But like George, how has the Bitcoin community treated you? I know there's some scary people out there, and I'm wondering, like, if some of those people are listening right now, like, you know, what would you say to them, and what have they done to you?
I had only one incident where someone actually threatened to do something nasty, not to me, but to people around me.
We've only had one so far, too. We're trying to get more.
But I think it was just, I mean, some not serious. I mean, someone with just, some kid in some mom's basement or whatever doing that. So, but I don't know. I get scared sometimes. Yes, but I don't know. I
think like
by
what
and large people got used to me. And listen, I mean, I think I am just one sample of 6,999,000,000 people who don't like Bitcoin, don't believe in Bitcoin. So the only difference
right.
is that I am writing to the forums, and all the other guys like me are not paying any attention to the forums. So
George, what will it take to for your mind to change on Bitcoin? Is that possible?
Changing what sense? I mean,
well, like, what would make you think that, like,
there's utility,
even though it's a naturally occurring Ponzi? This naturally occurring Ponzi's got 1,000 years in its gas tank.
You mean my prediction that it was the last? I mean, something that would make me believe that it has a future.
That its future is pretty long. Like,
well, like if it. It would have to change. I mean, it would not have to be the, like Bitcoin like it is today, because I don't think that Bitcoin as it is today can scale. Even if it could scale to a bigger size, it would actually be attractive to people. So
I'm surprised to hear that objection.
But one thing I think, going back to the conversation before, is that it would have to be something that smells legal, right? It's not
that's funny.
It's not
well, that's never going to happen. So.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
Awesome. So
no,
you don't know
I
that.
Don't know.
This is the one time that would like with Isabella, I was like, well, we'll come back in a year and we'll see what you think. But with you, I think the answer is like, well, I mean, I think we have the same inputs, and until you change your mind on like,
I mean, I don't know that. I don't think that Bitcoin, as it is now, can be something that governments. You have seen James Dimon, like the J.P. Morgan's CEO, talking about
Jamie
Bitcoin.
Diamond?
Hmm?
Jamie Dimon, is that his name?
Yeah, yeah. The I mean, I guess he said the same thing as I said now, that's. The governments are never going to tolerate Bitcoin if it is outside their control.
Right. Well, we will see. So, I mean, that's been the core of your and our,
right,
our, I think, disagreements.
So,
here.
George, let's get you on in a year. We'll see what you
think. I mean,
I'm
kidding. Not because of that I think that Bitcoin does not have a future. I think it doesn't have a future but for other technical reasons. I mean, simply it is not a good payment system. I think that's
well, we don't,
that's why it's for drug dealers.
We don't, right, we don't need a good payment system is what we say.
It's the best bearer asset system we have in the world.
Right.
Well, okay, well, whatever.
Do you disagree with that? Because, like, I can't think of a better bearer asset system.
Is a better what?
Bearer asset it's system.
Bearer instrument system.
I mean, for investment, you mean, or
right,
something, or a long-term investment?
Well, it's the only digital one.
There's no such thing as a bearer asset, other than, like, diamonds, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, so you're saying bearer assets because it for use as a currency, right? For
no,
use
no,
as
no.
money.
So George, like, back in the...
That's why bearer bonds were used when they existed, right?
Right, it was for transmitting large amounts of currency with no questions asked.
And we stopped it because it was used for exactly what Bitcoin's being used for.
Right.
Yeah, so you are still thinking of Bitcoin as a currency, right?
Well, no, we're thinking of it as a bearer instrument. It obviously is a bearer instrument. It's digitally enforced bearer instruments.
I mean, bearer instruments could be used for people to invest now, and then 10 years from now, they still have that money, and then they can redeem those bearer bonds. But,
right.
Or you can use the bearer bonds to give it someone to buy something, right? So in the second case, you are using it as a currency. That's a payment system, right?
I mean, only if you consider like bonds currencies, though, you know, which you may or may
if
not. I don't know.
If you use them as currencies, then they are currencies, right? So like bearer bonds were used as a currency.
But they come with the risk of the issuing bank. And currencies come with the issue of a Federal Reserve Bank. So it's fairly different.
Yeah, well,
also,
okay. I don't think.
Also, you made the statement earlier that currencies don't have speculative value and bonds would.
And bonds would, yeah.
But that depends on what you're using them for, right? I mean, there are people who invest in currencies. I think that's like investing Bitcoin. But I think that doesn't make any sense because currency, the dollars and euros are not meant to be things that you invest in to store value for 10 years from now or to gain. They are not intended to be speculative instrument that you buy and sell to make money.
Sure, we ask a couple questions of all of our guests, so I want to get at least one of those questions out of the way here. Do you believe markets are efficient?
Not very much, but especially when there is no information that they can use to predict the future. They can only, make conclusions of data that exists, and there is no data on the future of Bitcoin, for example.
But in general, so, do you think that markets trend towards efficiency? The deeper they are being an indicator.
They tend to be efficient based on the information that is available. I think
that's fair.
I mean, but you should ask the economists. I mean, I'm a computer scientist, an economist. That, right? So
I appreciate that humility.
Yeah, but I think that it depends on the information that people have. Like, say, is the price of Apple stock fair or right or correct? The market has some information about the size of the company, what it makes, and how the demand for iPhones is in the past, but the recent past. And I think the market is efficient to the point of using that information. But if there is information that's missing, the market cannot guess it.
Well, George,
so in the case of Bitcoin, I think there is almost zero information about anything.
Well, George, I appreciate you being on the show. I think that this was a good interview for us. This interview went about the way I expected it to, because we've talked a lot offline and such. I appreciate what you do. I really do. I think that we're on opposite sides of a fence.
We appreciate the skepticism just generally.
But you're very competent. You're the right guy to do that job. And we very well might be wrong. Like, we know that. So if we are wrong, it's been a pleasure.
We'll come on your show, and we'll talk about it.
And at least... Well,
thank you for the interview, and I must say that it was much better, much more pleasant than I expected.
Oh, George, we only treat women poorly.
You're not a woman, are you?
Sorry?
You're not a woman, are you?
No, I'm not a woman. Why?
I am.
Jean-Seth is. All right, George. Well, I think that's it. George, where can people find out more about you? Do you have a Twitter or a website you want to promote?
My Twitter is George Stolfi. My website is George Stolfi. I mean, it's too complicated to say it here, but if you go to my university, you will find me there. Whatever. You Google me and you find it, I think.
Welcome to the dojo. We got fun and games. We got everything you want. Bitcoin, we got all the names. We are the corners that you find whenever you're in need. If you got the crypto, honey, we got what you need in the dojo. Welcome to the dojo. Watch it bring it to you. Keys. I want to watch you bleed. Welcome to the dojo. We take it post by post. And if you want it, it's going to be mine. It's the price you pay. And you're a very sexy girl. Very hard to please. You can taste the front page, but you won't get there for free. In the dojo. Welcome to the dojo. Feel my private keys. I want to hear you seed.
You know, I know what's going to happen as a result of that interview. A lot of people are going to say, like, you are whiners. You are just trying to get him to, like, say that he wants drugs, and that's stupid. But, like, for me, I have a very fundamental difference of opinion with Jay Stolfi.
I think people got to understand that we don't have any judgment about the drug stuff. Like,
not only that, but I try to look at what's happening, and I see this happening. He doesn't, somehow.
Well, no, you know as well as I do that, the conversations we have with people is that they want to judge people for using drugs. That's like what it is.
I know.
And they, like, Stolfi's the same way. For him, drugs don't exist. They don't exist. Transactions don't exist. They are unreal.
I think in his case, it's even less about judgment, though. I think for him, it's just that, like, he just seems like a respectful, knowledgeable person.
He's around people who are like, no one uses drugs.
Exactly. I think that his circle is just not our circle.
We go to the opera.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay Stolfi, if you're ever coming down to South Florida, I want to take you to the Broward County bus station.
Or to the BTMs.
Or to the 79th Street flea market.
Mr. Stolfi, why are you playing with Bitcoin? The only thing I use Bitcoin for is to pay for my opera tickets.
Yeah. You know, I almost feel bad for him because he's found a great niche. He's doing a great job. And I think it's, in this case, he's blinded in his own way by his ideology, right?
I want to point out something, though, about Jay Stolfi that I really like.
Tell me.
I have a lot of respect for.
I do.
That dude has so much satisfaction in being himself. He don't need no one.
I agree.
And that is rare. Everyone I know in Bitcoin, especially the academics, seem to really want thank yous and kudos. And you don't get that shit.
No.
You don't get that shit. I'm sorry.
He's
and
very
Jay Stolfi
funny.
Just... He's here because he likes to be here.
He's hilarious,
he likes to
dude.
Look
he's
at
a
things.
Very funny guy.
He's very funny, and he doesn't need kudos. He's here because he wants to be.
Yeah, and you know what? He's done very well for himself. Even in though, like, look at some of these other like guys that are like anti-Bitcoin. Like, what's that guy who wrote a book? God, he looked like a little bit of a crazy. He got mad at me because of something stupid.
Which
I did.
One?
We interviewed him on the channel
Alex
a while back.
Scott William Moogly Loogly.
No, he gish galloped me. He did a book on like
Alexander Jeffrey Alexander.
That's the one. Jeffrey
yeah.
something. Is it Alexander? Jeffrey something. Anyways,
Alexander.
He came and went. Look at Mark Williams. He's a fucking butthurt bottom is what he is. He
a
fucking
butthurt bottom.
He really is.
You don't have to say that, dude. If he's a bottom, he's butthurt.
Yeah. Well, he threw his
bottom.
Ring in the
he's
hat
a bottom.
And it was like, this will go nowhere.
Well, I'm done.
And then he became the laughing stock of our Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that was that. Jay Stolfi has managed to keep his dignity for as long as I've seen him around and his humor.
And he's fine. And he's completely wrong about the drugs. But he's right about a lot of other shit.
He's also got – I forgot what the gambling is kind of weird too, because I wonder if he's against gambling, because I feel like he's Brazilian, right? And so like in Latin American countries, gambling is like a very standard thing. So he must be able to process that at some level.
He'll probably like the gambling. Like there's going to be something that clicks for him and he's gonna be like, oh, Bitcoin's useful.
He's invested himself so much at this point to where, like, I think he's funny. He's, like, written – they have, like, American, like, drop listers on one of these. They had, like, SEC had a call for comments, and, like, Jay Stolfi will do those.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's appeared on a number of these where, like, he chimes in. So, like, he will probably advocate for various bans of Bitcoin. And you don't have to say
– That's what we need. Bitcoin banned. It'll increase the value of Bitcoin.
Probably. Exactly.
Maybe Jay is on our team.
Maybe. That would be very Bitcoin,
right?
If he won by losing or lost by winning, you know, like that's so Bitcoin.
Come on, like I won, I'm rich.
Yeah. I wonder if he's gotten scammed yet. I bet he hasn't gotten scammed
yet.
You know,
well, he was on our show, so maybe he's been scammed at least once.
Here's the thing: I actually even think that he's a Bitcoiner, if only because he hangs out with them all the time, right? Like, what is it to be a Bitcoiner if not to hang out with them all the time?
Right.
Like, do you have to own a Bitcoin to be a Bitcoiner?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that being a Bitcoiner is incidental to your ownership.
Are you born a Bitcoiner?
Yeah.
Are we the dumbest people online?
Yeah. Dude, like, you know a Bitcoin. You know it as well as I do. You see a guy, you're like, you're a Bitcoiner. Yeah. There's a few things. Usually they're black.
Nowadays.
Sometimes they're white, but, like, they're special. Libertarians want to be Bitcoiners. They try really hard.
Do you remember the diversity stuff we were seeing, like, in 2013? Like, it's all white men.
It's all white men.
And you and I were like, that'll take care of itself.
We knew it, too. It's really funny. What's funny to me is all the Bitcoin users are like, don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Yeah.
And all the, like, all the people that everyone looks at are, like, the white guys. So, like, you know. That's the way the world is.
Our Buckcoin, we love your comments. I look forward to seeing your comments at the end of this. I can already predict what some of your comments will be, but
they will
surprise
us. They'll be awesome. I hope that they're insulting.
Tell us what you hate about our show. Tell us what you hate about us. And tell us what you hate about Jay Stolfi, even if there's anything. I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't hate him. We really do. I like
Threaten
that guy.
Threaten his life.
Don't do that.
Give us death threats.
Yes. We collect those. So the reason we do this.
Vinay Gupta was doing that this week.
Death threat tokens. Yeah, well, we got a whole lineup. Mr. Golden Teeth.
Golden Teeth is going to start giving me death threats. I had to block that guy.
We had a bunch of death threats.
First
already.
One I've ever blocked. And I only blocked him from WhatsApp. If he finds me on Twitter, I'll let him engage.
All right, party people. If you like this episode, we have tons of stuff. Certainly, you've probably heard of us before, but, like, check out this recent thing we just did with a guy named Pasta about his use of Bitcoin. And, frankly, in the context of this interview, I think that would substantiate a lot of our claims. So,
right. So
listen to that and think real hard about what you're hearing. And if what you're hearing is, like, you know, discordant with your own views, maybe, you know, you should think about that. I don't know.
Mm.
Or maybe we should.
Well, reach out to be me. Able to think the think.
Reach out to me on Twitter. I'm DeRoseTech.
And I am JunSeth.
If you want to talk about Bitcoin all day, every day, you can reach out to me on Telegram. I'm Brighton36.
He's
I'll get you in the
Don't
dojo.
Do it.
And if you're Vinay Gupta, find the dirt on me. Find the dirt, Vinay. Get me.
This is
JunSeth. Expose me.
Chunk up the deuce of the south. The mass has ended. Go in peace. St. Catherine, pray for us.